Besides the abuse of preborn lads and the debauch of married women, he committed a rape upon Rubria, a Vestal virgin. He was upon the point of marrying Acte, his freedwoman, having gotten some men of consular rank to falsely swear that she was of royal descent. He gelded the boy Sporus and endeavored to transform him into a woman. He even went so far as to marry him with all the usual formalities of a marriage settlement, the rose-colored nuptial veil and a numerous company at the wedding. When the ceremony was over, he had him conducted like a bride to his own house and treated him as his wife. It was jocularly observed by some person that it would have been well for mankind had such a wife fallen to the lot of his father Domitius. This Sporus he carried about with him in a litter round the solemn assemblies and fairs of Greece, and afterwards at Rome, through the Sigillaria, dressed in the rich attire of an empress, kissing him from time to time as they rode together. That he entertained an incestuous passion for his mother, but was deterred by her enemies, for fear that this haughty and overbearing woman should, by her compliance, get him entirely into her power and govern in everything, was universally believed, especially after he had introduced among his concubines a strumpet who was reported to have a strong resemblance to Agrippina. He prostituted his own chastity to such a degree that after he had defiled every part of his person with some unnatural pollution, he at last invented an extraordinary kind of diversion, which was to be let out of a den in the arena, covered with the skin of a wild beast, and then assail with violence the private parts both of men and women, while they were bound to stakes. After he had vented his furious passion upon them, he finished the play in the embraces of his freedman, Doryphorus, to whom he was married in the same way that Sporus had been married to himself, imitating the cries and shrieks of young virgins when they are ravished. I have been informed from numerous sources that he firmly believed no man in the world to be chaste, or any part of his person undefiled, but that most men concealed that vice, and were cunning enough to keep it secret. To those, therefore, who frankly admitted their unnatural lewdness, he forgave all other crimes. He thought there was no other use of riches and money than to squander them profusely, regarding all those as sordid wretches who kept their expenses within due bounds, and extolling those as truly noble and generous souls who lavished away and wasted all they possessed. He praised and admired his uncle Caligula upon no account more than for squandering in a short time the vast treasure left him by Tiberius. Accordingly, he was himself extravagant and profuse beyond all bounds. He spent upon Tiridates 800,000 sesterces a day, a sum almost incredible, and at his departure presented him with upwards of 1,000,000. He likewise bestowed upon Menecrates the harpist, and Spiculus, a gladiator, the estates and houses of men who had received the honour of a triumph. He enriched the usurer Cercopithecus Panorotes with estates both in town and country, and gave him a funeral in pomp and magnificence little inferior to that of princes. He never wore the same garment twice. He has been known to stake 400,000 sesterces on a throw of the dice. It was his custom to fish with a golden net drawn by silken cords of purple and scarlet. It is said that he never travelled with less than 1,000 baggage carts, the mules being all shod with silver, and the drivers dressed in scarlet jackets of the finest Canusian cloth, with a numerous train of footmen and troops of Mazacans, with bracelets on their arms, and mounted upon horses in splendid trappings.